Dark Horse Rosé. And it feels so good.
Can't wait to drink this.
Hi.
Welcome back to Perder, She Wrote, the podcast where we won't sing anymore.
We promise.
We have Dark Horse Rosé again.
We are fulfilled.
Yes.
In our wine needs.
Mm-hmm.
We have Milano cookies.
Changing it up from the Danish butter cookies.
We just needed a little chocolate.
Little hit of it.
Just
a touch.
A touch of chocolate. I am Sunshine Lamontri.
And I'm Dana Lococo. And this is Perder, She Wrote.
The podcast where we read and discuss cozy cat mysteries.
In all of their weird self-published glory.
This is episode 4.
Mm-hmm.
And we are so excited to get back to books.
Yes. I sincerely hope that everybody enjoyed our CatCon recap. Thank you all for listening to it.
So we would love it if you could take a couple minutes, quick second even, and just rate, review, and subscribe.
Yes.
Any of those, any combination of the above.
One of the above, all of the above. It is all great, and we all sincerely appreciate you for it.
It would help us reach a larger listenership.
Yes.
Is that a word?
I think so.
Okay.
You guys, we love the tens of fans we have. And maybe one day we will have tens more. It's a dream.
It's a dream.
But it's 2017 and we are going to make our dreams come true.
So let's talk about the book we read.
I feel like we've been building to this book in a pretty logical way. The first book was a pretty standard cozy mystery, Catnapped. Then we moved on to Perfect Murder and introduced the idea of a talking cat. And now we've gone all in on the paranormal and the spooky, because in addition to talking cats, now we've got witches.
That's right. Our main character is a witch.
Yes.
Who can talk to cats.
She could communicate with them with her magic in her mind. And she's not the only witch in town. There are many. If you're all clamoring to know what this is book one in the Wonder Cats mystery series. Entitled A History of Magic.
It's by Harper Lynn.
Who herself is extremely mysterious.
We dug around on the internet and came up empty-handed. Who is Harper Lynn?
She's the author of 6 other cozy mystery series. But all we know about her, in addition to writing cozy mysteries, is that she likes yoga and hanging out with her family and friends.
She wrote a series of cozy mysteries about a grandma.
Yes.
With a gun.
Secret Agent Granny.
Secret Agent Granny. I was close.
You were close.
She probably has a gun.
On most of the covers, it is an illustration of a grandma with a gun.
Like a chic grandma, though.
Yeah, it's a very stylized, fashionable illustration.
Yeah.
Not like a horrifying and upsetting one. But Harper Lynn is pretty mysterious. You know, she writes a lot of mysteries about baking and cafes.
That's right. Food.
And she's got this one, Wonder Cats, which is, actually, it's kind of food related. Our main characters do own a bakery as well. Or rather a cafe, I guess.
Yeah, like a coffee shop.
Yes.
Situation.
Yes.
How did people feel about this book?
Well, I would say overall, it was pretty well received. Not necessarily the strongest start, but we had some people showing this book love. Got Cats in a Cradle giving it a 5-star review, calling it a great beginning. I like cozies about witches and telepathic or talking cats. This book is a good beginnings. I look forward to the rest of the series, but I have noticed most cozies these days with witches, but no warlocks. So, we've got witches, but no warlocks.
Yeah, this person is looking for magical gender equality.
Yes.
Which is, you know, a fair concern. There are no warlocks.
True.
In this book.
There are not.
Witch exclusive.
Yes. We also had a review from Amazon user Wayne Henry Wilcoxon. He gave it 3 stars. And he said, a good read, but disappointing in the types of magic used, all of which could be explained by ESP and paranormal activities. Witches and magic are usually a cut above these abilities.
Yeah, this guy's a magical elitist.
He's a magical mansplainer.
He's like, did you know that when witches do magic, it's better than ESP?
maybe he's a warlock. Maybe he wrote the other review and he's salty that he's not seeing himself represented in his cozy mysteries.
Well, welcome to the club, mister.
Yes, exactly. We have so much more progress to make, Wayne Henry Wilcoxon.
By the way, that's a serial killer name.
Such a serial killer name. Terrifying.
Yeah.
Just like too much. So let's see. We've got A History of Magic. I would say that this one really checked off all the boxes of a cozy mystery.
Right. Our cozy rubric. What do we have?
So first off, quaint town.
Wonder Falls, which is Niagara Falls, but small and with none of the touristy bullshit.
No. This is also in Canada, so I suppose there's an extra cozy dimension, at least for us wild, wild American readers.
Everyone's wearing flannel, like, flappy hats.
Yes. What are those? I have no idea.
You guys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the ones with the ear flaps.
Yeah.
Kind of like hunting hats.
They're all drinking, like, warm maple syrup as they walk around. Just
straight syrup.
Keeps them strong in the winter.
Right out of the tree. Just, like, put it in the thermos.
Yep. Yeah.
And, you know, Wonder Falls is a pretty small, cozy town.
The cafe that is the family business is called the Brouhaha.
Great cozy cafe name.
Yeah.
I would say that, you know, that's probably the coziest business there. You know, there was really no mention of, like, a yarn shop or a bookstore, which would have upped the cozy quotient a bit.
Yeah. Or, like, a bakery for dogs as well. Yes.
That would be very cozy.
A vegan restaurant.
There was no vegan restaurant in this. I would say of all the cozy mysteries we've read so far, Hampton Cove and its extremely unethical police department and newspapers is still
the coziest.
Down. So cozy.
Real cozy.
Yes. Oh, quaint occupations of our main characters. As we mentioned, they are all the owners of the Brouhaha Cafe.
So they're baristas, bakers.
Yes.
Cashier folk.
Yep. That too. Cozy cashiers.
And speaking of, they are quite plucky.
Yes. We've got three witches that we follow throughout this book. There's Aunt Astrid, who's kind of the matriarch of this family.
She's described as like a hippie.
I think she's like in her late 60s, but still loves tie-dye and has long gray hair.
Talks about the universe with a capital U.
Yeah.
We're all connected.
Totally. Then there's her daughter, Bee, who is very warm and friendly. Everyone likes her. She loves books.
She's super smart. She's studying to be a doctor or just casually, recreationally learning doctor information.
Yes, Bee is very bookish and smart. She loves physics, plants, pretty much anything. She basically lives in a library with her husband and their cat, and she's really living the dream.
And then there's Kath.
Kath is our main character. The book is told from her point of view.
It opens where she's sitting in the forest, I guess, kind of writing in her journal.
Yes.
About the events that have recently passed. So it's got kind of a dear diary.
Right.
No one can know, so I'm gonna write it all down.
Gonna write it straight here for anyone to read it. Kath is definitely more fiery. She just kind of charges headlong into situations and
they describe her as impulsive.
That's a good word for her. Also, she has a cat named Treacle, who is a pretty adventurous, free-spirited cat himself.
That's right.
Which actually is a good bridge into our next piece on the cozy rubric, is the cats. We've got three witches, and each witch has a cat, so we've got three cats to follow around in this book.
And they are Treacle?
Yep, that's Kath's cat. He is a black cat with a star-shaped scar on his forehead.
Right. Not conspicuous at all.
And definitely not supposed to be Luna from Sailor Moon, who is a black cat with a moon on her forehead.
Yeah.
Then we have Aunt Astrid's cat, Marshmallow, who is a large, fluffy white Maine Coon and also a witch.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The cat can do magic.
Yes.
Some serious magic as well.
Yeah, you do not want to cross Marshmallow because she will ruin your life.
Is Marshmallow a girl?
You know, it's hard to tell because sometimes the author refers to Marshmallow as she.
That's right.
And then sometimes as he. So
there were some consistency concerns.
A little bit. Not as much as the Amazon reviews brought up, because there were a few salty Amazon reviews about grammar. But yeah, that was one of them. Marshmallow was a boy sometimes and a girl. But I guess Marshmallow is also a witch cat and is probably gender at this point.
I was going to say, maybe Marshmallow is more of a divine being.
Could be.
And is essentially both genders and neither.
That would explain how she could literally tear the space-time continuum.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves, though.
Yes.
We've got a lot of magic logic to talk through.
And how. We've got one more cat in the mix, too, and that cat is Little Peanut Butter.
Peanut Butter is a scaredy cat.
I think Peanut Butter is just a regular cat who can't really handle himself around all of these magic cats and witches, so Peanut Butter just spends most of the book whining.
Peanut Butter's like, don't scratch the carpet, I'll get in trouble.
Which, very, like, cat fear, but...
Yeah, so we've got our small town, we've got our quaint occupations, our plucky heroines, our cats. Oh, we have law enforcement.
Yes.
That just causes trouble.
Seriously. In keeping with the tradition of other cozy mysteries we've read, the cops in this town are the worst. They are pretty incompetent and, in this case, pretty rude.
I would say insensitive at the very least.
Like, the Wonder Falls Police Department clearly did not make them take any sort of human resources training or, like, here's how to deal with grieving victims shortly after a murder. Because these cops are going wild.
They're racial bias.
Yes.
Like.
Yeah, they're kind of the worst. And our last cozy mystery checklist piece, I think this is a more unintentional trend that we've noticed.
This is something we personally picked up on. It might not be part of the official cozy rubric.
Right.
But
the twist.
The motivation behind the villain.
Comes out of nowhere.
Left field.
Completely out of nowhere. Much like the first two books we read where the bad guy was not really introduced and their motivation explained until probably like the last 20 pages of the book. So you're reading it and you're like, what? Who? I didn't see this coming. And not like in a good, oh, it was there.
Ooh,
all along.
I'm so surprised.
Right, it was under
I should have picked up the clues.
Yeah. There are no clues. But we'll get into that a bit later. It's really hard to summarize this book neatly. I guess, you know, if we kind of go off of the summary on the jacket, got our three witches, Aunt Astrid, Kath, and Bee. Their cafe burns down, and their dear friend and baker is killed in the fire. They also discover that the cafe was burned down so someone could steal their spell book that was hidden under the cafe.
Not only hidden under the cafe, but hidden in another dimension.
Yes.
Only accessible under the cafe.
Right. So even though it was hidden very well, it gets stolen. Then there's a new cop in town.
We call him Blake Broadley.
Yes.
But I think in the book, he's actually Blake Sandberg.
I think so.
But he should be Blake Broadley.
He's the new cop in town. He's trying to investigate this murder, but
he's a big city slicker.
Yeah, he's a real tough guy. He's the horrifically insensitive one. His partner, Jake, is actually Bee's husband, although Jake does not know that his wife is a witch.
Which is crazy, because another completely random character in the book discovers that they are witches.
Yes.
But her husband
never figures it out.
Clueless.
And it's not even like a Bewitched scenario where she kind of wiggles her nose and like erases his memory, which I think is what happened on Bewitched. Or no, did he know she was a witch?
He found out at one point.
Okay.
I think it was after they switched Darren's, though.
Oh, maybe. Because I was like, wait, was that show about, did he know that she was a witch or did she keep it a secret?
She kept it a secret. And then at one point he figures it out and he's like, I feel so betrayed.
Oh.
You're a witch.
That took a weird turn.
Well, I think he gets over it because she's, you know, pretty.
And then they replace him with a different actor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Jake is the Darren in this situation. He doesn't realize that B is a witch. Time goes on. A few old faces pop back up in Wonder Falls. And it looks like they could be connected to the cafe burning down and the spellbook's disappearance. But then in a twist that comes out of nowhere, it turns out that, spoiler alert, it's an evil cult.
It's an evil cult that hates magic and is trying to kill people who could even be remotely related to magic. For example, goths.
Yes. Yep, you don't want to be goth in this town because the cult is going to get you.
But also they are trying to steal magic to use for themselves.
They're called the Order, so we'll just put a pin in them
because
we're going to dissect because they're up to some very interesting things.
We have a lot to talk about in regards to the Order.
Oh, do we ever.
Before we get there, I don't even know where to start.
It's hard to pick a place to start because, you know, this book was kind of all over the place. I guess we can start with the witches themselves and this notion that they need to remain hidden to regular people.
Right. So the story that Kath unwinds for us is that the Greenstones, which is her family clan, came over from wherever.
They ended up in Ontario somehow.
They were hiding from non-witches, seeking acceptance, and they land in Wonder Falls because there is a divine being, perhaps, called the Maid of the Mist.
Yes, there's this sort of earth goddess that lives in the falls, and the Greenstone women can commune with her, usually in their dreams. This was another reason I think the book was so freaking confusing, is that there wasn't really a lot of rules on how magic worked. So on one hand, we have this nature goddess that lives in a waterfall that communicates with them through dreams. Okay, cool. But then there's also spell books that they need to cast spells.
And they use crystal wands sometimes.
But also, Kath and Aunt Astrid, at one point, with the help of Marshmallow the Cat, tear the space-time continuum in half so they can travel to the past?
I think they travel forward. They travel 3 days ahead.
Oh, right.
So they can sneak into the crime scene without being detected.
Yes.
Right then. And then, so they, like, time travel, essentially.
Yes.
By bending the space-time continuum.
With the help of a cat. In addition to space-time continuum bending, spell books, communing with nature goddesses, Kath can do some light warging,
right? I guess. So near the end of the book, she's in the forest in the dark, and she's like, "Never fear, I'm using the echolocation of the bats
and the eyesight of the owls to make my way through the woods." What?
I thought you could just communicate with animals. Yes. Now you can borrow their abilities.
So that's a whole other type of magic. And then on top of that, they also do some just regular incantations, you know, kind of like a double-double toil and trouble thing. It is all over the map.
Right. Aunt Astrid is also a psychic and for the fun of it, does astrology readings and tea leaf readings for whoever in town is interested in that sort of thing.
Right.
Bee has healing powers because she can see people's life forces in the other dimension because we're all connected to another body in another dimension.
I mean, it's just buck wild.
It's mind-boggling.
It is.
One of the general rules of writing, like, genre fiction is that you have to create a world that's believable.
Yes.
And even if it's a high fantasy world that's detached from our reality, it has to have a structure that it works within and laws that it obeys. And this book is like, anarchy!
Everything is happening! Like, we got some psychic cats, but then also we're gonna rip the space-time continuum. I'm just gonna store
a spellbook. We need a wand!
Yeah, store a spellbook in a pocket dimension. No big deal. It's fine. Let me communicate with my cat in my brain.
I don't speak cat, and my cat doesn't speak human, we just transfer pictures back and forth, but we understand each other perfectly.
Yeah.
Because no one could ever misinterpret a picture.
Which is like, what?
What?
I think you can.
You can. That's an imperfect mode of communication.
There's a lot of holes there. I would say of all of the magic flying around, I just love that Marshmallow the cat can do magic.
And that, like, the thought process that this cat goes through. And I guess we must know this because Marshmallow told Kath about what he or she or they.
Yes.
Should we use the pronoun they?
Yes. We'll use a gender-neutral pronoun for the gender-neutral cat. Yes.
What Marshmallow did before getting up to this point where they ripped the space-time continuum in order to basically sully a crime scene.
Right. There's some boundaries that the author puts in, like, our witches and their cats don't have an unlimited amount of magical stamina. So after they rip the space-time continuum, they're at least pretty tired and can't do magic for the next day. But it's still kind of like, you just bent the space-time continuum. I feel like that should have more of an effect on you than, like, I've got a headache. I can't go to work today.
I feel fatigued.
Right.
It seems like the consequences are not very substantial for that amount of magic.
I actually have a quote here. Kath is thinking about the spell they're going to cast to move forward in time to check out this crime scene. And she says, first of all, a big spell was a big spell. Second of all, I wondered if we could really end the world by casting it. Just like, I wonder.
Oh, could we?
Could we? Maybe.
I mean, I guess it's worth the risk.
Let's just go right on ahead and do it.
We really need to investigate this crime scene. So, I mean, if we end the world,
yeah,
so be it.
We just got to do it.
Yeah.
We should mention, too, at the crime scene, when they do time travel to it, Kath discovers a piece of evidence there, and it is a silver pyramid-shaped necklace. So naturally, she pockets it.
But before she pockets it, she takes her phone out in this, like, future time space that they're magically inhabiting and takes some pictures of it. Why does she take pictures if she's just gonna take it with her?
Also, like, are you really gonna sit here and tell me that Verizon works? Yeah, like, I can't even make a call from my apartment half the time. And yeah. They're like, yeah, you just traveled 3 days in the future by bending the space-time continuum.
T-Mobile's like, you left the confines of the greater Chicagoland area. Now you have no service.
Yeah, good luck. Guess you should just get a magic cat and time travel next time. So this necklace, it's a silver pyramid, which, you know, sounds a little suspicious.
Yeah, very Illuminati.
Yeah, a lot.
A lot of naughty.
A lot of naughty, yes. A lot like that. So Kath has some ideas of who it could belong to. One of the early suspects in this crime of burning the cafe down is her old friend from high school, a man by the name of Min Park. And someone reports that he was near the cafe when it burnt down, so he's a suspect.
And I have this quote that B asks, and she says, is that why Min Park is your prime suspect? He's Asian, so he must be a member of the Yakuza. That's so racist.
Oh, B, that statement itself is so racist.
Because he's not Japanese.
No.
He's Korean.
And they know that.
And they know.
And it's like, there's not just one crime syndicate. Good grief, B.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be the smart one.
Jeez.
So he's under suspicion. So Kath, taking things into her own hands, decides to head to the police station where Min is, and she wants to find out for herself if he's guilty, so she plans to drop this necklace casually in the hopes that he'd pick it up and realize, oh, this is mine, because if he doesn't recognize it, then surely he wasn't at the crime scene. So she goes through with this plan, and lo and behold, Min Park does recognize the necklace.
And pockets it. He's like, oh, I must have dropped that.
But so does Blake Broadley.
Oh my god.
Terrible cop. We need to back up a second on Blake Broadley. We mentioned he's the new cop in Wonder Falls. I forget where he hails from. I believe he's from Boston.
Yes, that's right, because we talked about how he's the real Mark Wahlberg.
Yes. shortly after the cafe burns down, our three greenstone witches come to survey the damage, and Blake Broadley says to them, "Hey, there's a body in there, burnt to a crisp. Your baker's been roasted." Which is like, what? A man is dead. Like, their friend is dead.
Not only did their family business burn down, but one of the people that they hold dear in the world was burned to death.
And he's just like, yep, baker's been roasted.
Yeah, Mr. Lanier could now be the body that's laying here, he says. Like, he's so funny. It's not even a good pun.
Not even a good pun.
Yeah, he's like, then it could very well be that Ted... is dead.
Man, this is not the time for comedy. You're a detective. Have some tact, dude.
These women could be inconsolable with grief.
To be fair, the way it was written, they were all incredibly chill that their family business burned down.
That's true. They were like, oh, we better grab some cleaning supplies.
Yeah, like, I'll bring them up, and I'll bring a mug, a big thermos of tea for everyone.
I guess we better call the insurance company. Not like, dear God, what are we gonna do? Our business.
This is our only source of income. Yeah, right. Ah. So, Blake Broadley kind of sucks, but he also recognizes this mysterious silver necklace. As it turns out, that necklace is a sign that you are part of an exclusive fraternal order called... The Order. which we mentioned a while back, because this was a huge portion of the book that came out of left field, and we're still a little unsure on what the Order is and how it works.
The Order is introduced, and then the entirety of it is explained within, like, two pages.
And it's introduced by Blake Broadley essentially barging into a hospital room and being like, I have to tell you something, everybody. There's a evil cult called the Order. My dad was a member, and I was a member for a while, which is why I recognized Min Park's silver necklace. He was a member too, but then he quit. The Order is dedicated to hunting witches, but also, they probably stole your spellbook because they want magic. What?
And also, I personally love when Blake is like, and my father wanted me to be a part of it because he made a lot of great friends.
Yes! That was his whole thing. Like, oh, he made some great friends. They did some fundraisers.
Yeah, the Order is like, they did some fundraisers.
Yes, yeah.
The Order is like... one part creepy, no, two parts creepy cult, one part, like, fraternity.
Yeah, yeah.
We're like, get a job, make some networking stuff.
Right, yeah. And also, the Order apparently has a website and active social network, like cult Facebook.
That's right.
Or cult LinkedIn.
Cult LinkedIn, exactly. Hold on, I have that quote somewhere. Mm. The Order do have a website directory, and the Wonder Falls Police Force does have an IT team. We can cross-reference what I know about these patterns, what they signify, and narrow down who the villain might be. They might not categorize every member, but... And then later on it goes, the social network on the Order's official website doesn't list everyone. Min Park wasn't on it because he quit lickety-split. And some higher-up members get certain privileges. So apparently only, like, the common folk of the fraternal cult called the Order are put on their public social network.
Right. And Blake's like, I don't know, we're going to have to get the IT department to cross-reference it and do all the things with the servers.
We're
going to
need a middle-aged hacker.
Yes. And then Kath is like, well, why don't you just sign into your account on cult Facebook? He's like, oh, I didn't think of that. Great idea. Which,
terrible, like, police work.
Yeah, you think you would have figured that one out right away. So this Order is running rampant. They're trying to steal a spell book.
It's crazy that this tiny town in Canada next to a waterfall is overrun with cult members.
Yes.
Their entire high school class.
Yes.
They graduated, what? Kath is 33 or something. So they have been out of high school
probably close to 15 years.
Yeah.
For being out of high school for nearly 15 years, all of the high school social hierarchies and drama are still a big motivating factor in everybody's lives.
Yeah.
I mean, we've mentioned Kath's friend, Min Park, who's back in town. He left town because he founded a tech company and made a lot of money and returned as a successful entrepreneur. But as a kid, he was bullied all the time.
And not just bullied, like, oh, I'm gonna push you down on the playground, give you a wedgie. Bullied as in one kid tied him up in a burlap sack and threw him in the river.
Which, like, that is, I'm pretty sure that's like a hate crime. That's not bullying.
That's, like, that's attempted way murdering. Worse.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Kath and him were so close because she used her witch powers to rescue him from the river.
Right. She was like, okay, fish.
Yeah, like,
everyone
come on, fish,
together now.
Quick, like, push him out.
Push him onto the bank.
Yes.
So, like,
although,
okay.
Although Min never realized that because I guess he was in a bag at the time and I guess just
probably thought, concerned about drowning.
Right. That too. Yeah. So there's him. And then there's a few other players from their high school. There's like, the kid that put him in the bag, Reuben Connors, who's just a big old bully.
And then his sister, Ruby Connors,
yes,
who is a flirtatious lady.
She's
dating one of the other women.
Yes. There's also a set of twins, Nadia and Naomi.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, there's so many side characters from this high school floating around that I don't remember which twin is dating Ruby, but
Nadia is dating Ruby,
okay,
and Nadia is the goth.
Yes.
That is also targeted,
yes,
by the fraternal cult.
The Order.
Known as the Order.
They think she might be a witch, so they set her house on fire.
Which, I mean,
yeah, I just don't even know.
I don't know either. The reason that they set her house on fire.
Oh, they think that she's in possession of the Greenstone spellbook.
Right, because Darla, who's like the queen mean girl.
She's like the Regina George of Wonder Falls.
She's exactly the Regina George, except now she's 30-something and going through a divorce.
But I think still really into being like the meanest mean girl in this small town in Canada.
While she's also living on Ruby Connors' couch.
Yeah.
Like just staying with her for whatever reason.
Because her business got hacked by, like, a vengeful old woman.
I mean,
again, there's so many weird threads.
It's an octopus of a story.
It's,
like, everything is dangling out in the unknown.
There's no
coherency.
Not a lot of these loose ends ever connect.
No.
So, yeah, mean girl Darla figures out that the Greenstones are witches. She tries to get their spell book.
She does that by seducing the baker, who is the one who died in the fire.
Yes. So she manages to steal the decoy spell book from the cafe, leaves. Shortly after, the Order shows up at the cafe and burns it down because they think there's witches there. Unfortunately, their baker, Ted, is, as Blake Broadley puts it, roasted in that fire. And then I guess the Order thinks Nadia is a witch, so they burn her house down. And then Aunt Astrid gets knocked out.
Because she has, and Astrid goes and gets the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, well, I've been hiding it in a pocket dimension.
Convenient, yeah.
But now, since people are after it, I'm just going to keep it with me.
Right.
You know, like, just on my person.
And at this point, evil, mean girl Darla figures out that Aunt Astrid has the real spell book. Hers is a fake. So she basically breaks into Aunt Astrid's home, clubs her, and steals the real spell book.
Right. And then hides it at Ruby's house. And that's how we know, at Nadia's house. See how confusing it is?
But I think Darla had the real one the whole time because it didn't burn down.
Oh.
Honestly, I don't know. It was so hard to keep track of what was going on in this book.
It was an incredibly complicated and, like, opaque plot to follow.
So much.
We get to the end. The climax is that Reuben Connors abducts Min Park.
Yes.
And Blake.
I think Blake Oh, God, this is confusing, too, because somehow Reuben Connors gets his hand on the real spellbook with right. the magic. Essentially, okay. this real spellbook that the Greenstone women have been tasked with protecting has spells in it that could, like, raise the dead and, you know, do all sorts of powerful stuff. Which seems kind of weird, because if they can rip the space-time continuum with their minds, you think they could, like, they wouldn't need a spellbook. Yeah. But it's powerful, so Reuben Connors of the Order steals it. I think Blake Broadley impersonates a member of the Order to try and, like, interfere with his plan, but then his cover is blown.
Well, I think he's like, oh, I want to be back in the Order. And they're like, okay, cool.
Right,
and yeah. then they're like, haha, not really. We don't trust you anymore.
Yes.
And Reuben Connors is like, I want to perform this magical spell in this book, but I need 3 people and a human sacrifice.
So at this point, he's kidnapped Kath's friend Min Park to be the human sacrifice, and Kath is coming to rescue them. She infiltrates the boat that they're all on, because the magic can only be performed by the falls. Luckily, Min Park left his old cult robe in his bedroom.
In his, like, hotel room.
Oh, his hotel room.
Yeah, so she goes
and just picks it up, like, ah, sweet. Thanks.
Good, a disguise.
Yeah, so she sneaks onto this boat. Everyone thinks she's another cult member, but then she pulls the hood off and is like, psych, it's me, Kath, I'm a witch, and I'm gonna stop you from doing some bad magic. But then Reuben Connors pulls a gun and is like, I'll just shoot everyone if you don't help me.
I'm gonna drown Min Park, and when he's dead, we're gonna say this thing, and then I'm gonna harness the power of nature.
Which, we think that's what would happen, because, again, it is unclear what spell they're performing from this book, why a member of the Order wants magic, if the Order is dedicated to eradicating magic. I don't even know. Unsurprisingly, they're not successful.
They only drown Min a little bit.
Kath is able to revive him, which breaks the spell because it didn't suck away all of his life force. However, in the scuffle, Blake Broadley is shot by bad guy Reuben Connors, but then he's fine a couple pages later, so. Yeah.
Don't even worry about it.
NBD, he's fine.
He's been shot in the heart before anyway.
Actual quote, yes. Yeah, actual quote, like, that's not the first time I've been shot in the heart, and I was kind of like, really? Like, what do you think
What's
Boston
that story?
Is like?
Yeah.
It was very strange. Really just a lot going on.
It was a very, very complicated...
Yes. More complicated than cozy, I would say.
It was a complicated cat mystery.
Yes.
Yeah.
Extremely.
But we wanted witches.
We did.
We wanted to see how magic might interplay with this cozy mystery genre.
It seemed like it would go hand in hand. I don't think this was the book that quite nailed it.
The execution, I would say, was a little off.
It was.
Here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think if there were some hard and fast rules with how magic worked, as opposed to everything works, everything is magic, and I think if there was less of a confusing web of side characters to keep track of, then we might have been in business. Because I'll admit, I did like the psychically communicating with a cat. That's cool. We didn't talk too much about the cats themselves, because they sort of took a backseat to most of the human drama.
And it was actually very strange, because all of it is being told by Kath.
Right.
But sometimes there are chapters that are essentially the cat's point of view or the cat's experience. Like, at one point, Marshmallow, the divine genderless cat.
Yes.
Comes in contact with the Maid of the Mist,
mm-hmm.
Who reaches out to him, or her, or them.
Which we see because Kath experiences it secondhand through her psychic bond with Marshmallow.
Right. Marshmallow transmits this experience to Kath, who later, presumably while writing this into her diary, writes it all down.
From Marshmallow's point of view.
Right.
So it was like, I had to leap out the window and run away from a dog.
Yeah.
Again, just really hard to follow.
And very disorienting.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I really hope that I'm not still caught up in high school drama by the time I'm in my early 30s. Like, Come on, guys. You gotta let it go.
Maybe that's a small town thing, though. Could be. All those people are still in their tiny Wonder Falls hometown.
True.
Maybe there's not...
I guess there's not, like, a booming social scene there.
Right. Or, like, a lot of personal growth.
I guess not.
Because Kath, who was the nerdy outcast in high school, grows up to be a 30-some-odd-year-old woman.
Whose only friends are cats.
Her friends are cats.
Yes.
Until Min Park comes back.
And she's like, cool, my one friend, he's back.
He's returned.
This is great.
Now I can talk to someone else.
I can be friends with someone besides my cats and my cousin, who's like my sister.
Oh, that reminds me. There is a weird backstory detail wherein Kat's parents died.
Oh, yeah.
Doing one of these spells, and they release, like, a monster that ate them or killed them.
Very unclear. There's some flashbacks and dream sequences where Kath reflects on how her parents died, which was performing some sort of magical ritual, but it did not go well, which is why she was raised by her aunt and her cousin is like her sister.
There's one moment where she hesitates before they bend the space-time continuum, and that's this chapter where they perform this giant spell or magical feat or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Is like the fourth chapter.
Yes.
She pauses for 1 second to be like, I wonder if I'll be consumed or die like my parents did.
Yeah. Oh, well. I'm just going to go ahead and do it.
We'll see.
Marshmallow's waiting. I had high hopes for this one, and it kind of let me down. I hate to say it.
Yeah. Not the worst thing we've read.
Not by far.
Not by far. But there was certainly room for improvement.
Yes. I believe there are 6 books in this series, so I hope that they've tightened up a bit. There's a little more of a structure to how the magic works instead of just complete chaos.
Yeah, here's to hoping for that.
Yes.
Let me just top us off a little bit.
Yes. Let's see. Oh, we should talk about our plans for a future episode. We actually had a very exciting development in Perder She Wrote Land. We were gifted a bona fide paperback cozy mystery.
Presumably starring a cat.
There is a cat on the cover. Oh,
a cat is involved, I should say.
Yes, by our dear friend and colleague. So we are going to be reading a Mary Muffin mystery entitled Much Ado About Muffin.
It will be my first hard copy of a cozy cat mystery.
I am eager to sit on public transportation reading this book.
I hope everyone notices.
I hope so too. So we should have that ready for you guys in a couple episodes. It's going to be good.
It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
There are recipes in the back of the book. So perhaps instead of Dutch butter cookies or Milano's, we will make muffins for each other.
I think that's going to have to happen.
Again, please take a moment out of your day to rate, review, subscribe.
Yes.
Give us some stars, say a word or two.
That would be clutch.
Click that subscribe button.
Yes.
It would mean the world to us.
We would adore you forever.
Forever.
So thanks again, kittens. We will talk to you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.